This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend and my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we have lots of exciting things to talk about. But I think the most exciting of which is our new coffee sponsor, Redbud Coffee. I've been drinking it for the last few days. A nice shipment of coffee came our way last week, including a beautiful mug and like a tiny mug. Is that like a for coffee aficionados? Is there some significance to like the really tiny one?
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, we had the mission to wear like buckets for a long time. I still have mine. It's just, yeah. You know. There's only so often that I want to drink an entire bucket of coffee at once, whereas this is sort of your standard, like, almost, it holds like a diner coffee mug amount,
yeah.
But then it's shaped sort of like a wine glass. So, yeah, I think it gives you a sense of sort of proper pretense,
yeah,
for drinking craft coffee.
Dude, it's awesome, but then inside of that one, there was the really tiny cup. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, do hipsters use that for like
That's an espresso cup.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. I was thinking of like the travel one that's shaped like a wine glass. Yeah, inside that there was a little ceramic espresso cup, those are so you can absolutely be like, yeah, I'm basically Italian.
Yeah, exactly. Pipe, can I ask you a somewhat personal coffee question? Only because I had a little bit of conflict over this one this week.
Oh, okay.
I got judged by another dude for the amount of like sweetener and cream that I put in my coffee. And he's one of these like, I'm not happy unless I'm drinking a glass of nails kind of guy. Like, I gotta prove my manhood by like grinding up some glass and just drinking that or whatever. So my question to you is, do you sweeten your coffee?
I don't sweeten my coffee, but it's not out of any sense of manliness. It's there's two reasons. One, like 3 years out of college, I was working a desk job and had put on a lot of pounds, and realized that scooping half a bag of sugar into my coffee every morning was one of those voluntary caloric intakes that I could remove from my life. So I quit doing that.
There you go.
And then I think I just developed a taste for it black. And so sweetened coffee is not, I don't enjoy it as much, but I like to poke fun at people who put, you know, like half a cup of creamer in theirs before they put in. But again, that's just, it's the same reason I poke fun at anybody. It's probably just a sense of inferiority or something. It's not, there's nothing inherently wrong with it.
Well, and that's what we are on this program, Pipe. Inferior men poking fun at other people. That's kind of the tagline for the whole project.
we've had some fairly smug listeners point that out to us over the years. Like, ugh, these guys are so, they very clearly have daddy issues or something.
Oh yeah, smug listeners. Those are we're always going to have those with us. You know,
they're our favorites. Yeah, Jesus said that, right?
The smug
listeners you'll always have with you.
Exactly. Well, Piper, something that's not disappointing is Redbud Coffee. So redbudcoffee.com/thehappyrant, is that the
it's just redbudcoffee.com, and then you just use the code Happy Rant, like one word, Happy Rant, at checkout, and it's a 10% discount off of anything. So you get one bag or 1,000 bags or mugs or swag or whatever.
Awesome.
Code Happy Rant will get you your 10% off.
Awesome. Really good coffee, really cool packaging. They're a great company. They will take great care of you, and they've taken great care of us, and we're back doing what we were put on this earth to do, Piper, which is be in the coffee business. And I couldn't be happier to have partnered with Redbud, but I'm also happy about some huge NFL news. And the hugest piece of NFL news is that my favorite CFL player, Chris Streveler, worked out for 3 teams this week. So for me, that's kind of my Super Bowl. The biggest news isn't that we have a 49ers Chiefs Super Bowl. It's that Streveler worked out for several teams. If you're not familiar with the work of one Chris Streveler, he will be the Taysom Hill of the 2020 season. Super athletic quarterback, burned the FCS to the ground when he was in college, provided a really interesting dimension for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers on their run to the Grey Cup. And if you're a listener to this program, you know that I'm a fan of all things CFL. And especially Chris Streveler. So good luck to Strev as he works out for several NFL teams. I have an acquaintance on the coaching staff of one of the teams that he worked out for and may or may not be working behind the scenes to excitedly promote Strebler to this team. So
who's which team was it, or
dude, you know,
must be secret. You know the inside source.
Yeah, you know the cloak and dagger nature of the NFL. Pipe.
Yeah,
and once the ink is dry on the contract, we'll be able to celebrate that together, and I'll purchase my Chris Strebler jersey. But yeah, I'm excited, man.
Where did he play his college ball?
He played. Gosh, man, I knew you were going to ask me that. He played somewhere in Division II or Division I AA rather. And you know what? Let me just look it up real quick. I feel like it's one of those Dakota schools.
Okay, because the Dakotas own 1AA.
They do.
Like, so South Dakota has been sort of good ish,
yeah.
And then North Dakota has won something like 9 of the last 10 titles. Like they're at the point where they need to be kicked out of that league into like grown up college football.
Exactly. All right, here we go. South Dakota. So you're right in terms of the Dakotas owning 1AA football. He was a South Dakota guy. Why do you think that is? Why do you think the Dakotas have such a embargo on 1AA?
I think it's because the Midwest and the North Midwest has a lot of really good football players who are not elite athletes.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of really good football in Iowa, Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, et cetera. Yep. It's the same reason that this region owns Division III football.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You know, like you look at like the Great Lakes region as a whole.
Yeah.
A ton of great football, but not the guys who are running 4.440s who are like 6'2 and 240. Like it's a bunch of guys built like me who are exceptional football players. You know, it's like 6'2", 200, but they play tight end or something like that.
And good athletes too. I watched Wisconsin Whitewater play St. John's in the D3 playoffs, and man, was I impressed. I mean, I came away from that game going, I felt like Whitewater could win 6 or 7 games in the MAC. They were that good. They executed well. They had athletes. It's really, really good football up there. So,
speaking of CFL, Wheaton College, my alma mater, who made it to like the semifinals or semifinals of the D3 playoffs this year.
Wow.
One of their best runs in years. Had a guy, a defensive back, just signed into the CFL. I can't remember his name because I'm twice as old as he is. But yeah, but that was, it's always fun when you see the tiny school guys go to any sort of professional football league. It's fun.
Dude, it's awesome. It really is. And as if our listenership needed more reasons to watch the CFL, there are a couple more. So June is right around the corner, CFL season right around the corner, and I'm excited. But on to lesser football things, Piper. We have a Super Bowl matchup now. Kansas City, San Francisco. It's going to be a beautiful uniform game. Lots of red.
Yeah, I was going to say,
field.
We both know this isn't really a football thing. This is a pageant thing.
Exactly.
We've discussed this in previous years.
The Super Bowl is a pageant. It's always a little bit of a disappointment, I think. And part of that is a function of our age. And the luster is off. It seems like the luster is off of it more and more, commensurate with how much they try to put the luster into it artificially. You know, the league and TV, and they create this huge atmosphere for the game, and I don't know. I think it's just being middle-aged is probably why it doesn't measure up. But I'm actually pretty excited about this Super Bowl. Like the NFL itself, I was aghast at the thought of a Packers-Titans Super Bowl.
I was nauseous is a little strong, but it was just sort of like a pit in my stomach, because it's boring versus the team I hate the most.
Well, yeah, boring versus the team you hate the most. And the fact that the Packers were maybe the least impressive 13-3 team ever. You know, it was one of those teams that they amassed this great record and you went, yeah, but they never really looked good. And, you know, it had to come to an end, which it did on Sunday. And the Titans' run came to an end as well. I don't know if you watched that game, but the Chiefs, the very first Titans offensive series, the Chiefs were staying in like a two high safeties look. And I was texting my dad like crazy. And I was like, if they don't drop Sorensen down into the box, this is unconscionable. You know, you can't.
Derrick Henry's going to do that thing again.
Oh, exactly. You can't play two high safeties against the Titans. And lo and behold, the next series, they loaded up the box. They went single high. They effectively took away Derrick Henry, and the rest is history. They did what they needed to do.
And we learned that quarterbacks named Ryan cannot win a game by themselves.
We did. But another thing I texted with my dad was, literally every quarterback looks bad compared to Patrick Mahomes. You know, like, I almost feel sorry for whoever's playing on TV against the Chiefs, because they just even the best quarterback is going to look terrible next to Mahomes.
Who's the most natural quarterback outside of Mahomes that you've ever seen, just in terms of, because he's not the best quarterback yet. Now, that's got to be, you know, Brady, Manning, probably one of those two.
Yeah.
But like, Peyton Manning was not as natural a quarterback.
Dude,
he was a genius.
Yeah.
And he you know, ran the whole field.
Yep.
Is it Marino?
Man, Marino was, he was great too. He was different. He had the quick release. He had the cannon. He had a complement of weapons there in Miami when he was in his prime. But, you know, the thing about Mahomes that makes him so interesting is that he really feels the pressure in the pocket well. He knows when to run. Mahomes, I don't want to say he won that game with his feet yesterday, but he really, like, he turned the tide, running for key first downs, you know, avoiding pressure. The Titans were heating him up. But he knew exactly how to move. It actually reminded me of Joe Burrow in the national title game, honestly. And as far as natural quarterbacking, he's got to be the most complete package, because Marino couldn't move. You know, even like young Marino couldn't move. Mahomes is more accurate than prime Elway. You know, Elway threw a lot of picks, and you know, he wasn't always accurate, especially early in his career.
I feel like looking at interception numbers for anybody before about 2006.
Dude, you're right.
It kind of, like, the offenses were set up so that the quarterback had to take all the risk.
Yeah.
You know, if Dan Marino was running, you know, Kyle Shanahan's offense or Andy Reid's offense, the league would burn to the ground.
Dude, you're
right. He'd make Drew Brees' numbers. You know, Drew Brees is thrown for 5,000 yards and 70% completions like 8 times or something.
Yeah.
He would do that with his left hand.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, it would be pretend.
Yeah. Yeah. All of which to say, man, I'm really stoked that Mahomes made it to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And I know that our Titans faithful listeners are going to be sad to hear that. But, and you know, there was a little part of me that was excited about seeing how far the Titans could take it. And in their defense, I really like Mike Vrabel. I think he's a really good coach. I think their future is bright, although they have some big decisions coming up, Pipe. If you're the Titans and you've got this complement of, you know, free agents whose contracts are rolling around, Jack Conklin, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, who do you pay? Who do you let go?
Not Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
Maybe you franchise him so that you get one more year of continuity.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the franchise number for the quarterback is going to be, it's, you know, it's not going to be a ridiculous number. I mean, you know, mid-20s or something, which is a lot of money. But
yeah,
if Kirk Cousins is getting 28 and you pay Ryan Tannehill 26 for 1 year, you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Because, yeah, if Cousins is the Mendoza line of, like, quarterback mediocrity, you don't want to roll the dice on getting worse there if you're the Titans. Which could happen, which could very much happen. Here's a sneaky...
I mean, honestly, they should go out and try to get, like, Andy Dalton. Because I think Dalton...
Yeah.
I think Dalton is not good.
Right.
But he is... But his value has been decreased so much...
Yeah.
...that my guess is they could get him for a song comparative to other prices. Whereas Tannehill's value is inflated right now, and he's not as good as Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
I don't think. I mean, neither of them are good.
Right.
But if you got Dalton at a moderate contract, you know, for 3 years, like the same deal that Cousins got lengthwise.
Yeah.
And then in the middle, you're like, you know what? We're going to draft a guy in the late first round or mid first round, whatever. And, you know, find an option.
Yeah. No, I know. Here's a Titans thing that I like. You know, I think if you're John Robinson and you, if you move on from Tannehill in favor of an Andy Dalton and it goes bad somehow, then you get crucified. So the floor on that one is low, at least perception wise. Here's something I'd like to see. Franchise Tannehill, draft Jalen Hurts in like the third or fourth round and develop him / use him in that Taysom Hill kind of, added dimension in the backfield role that we've seen some teams using. I'm a big Jalen Hurts guy. I think he can be a really effective NFL quarterback, and he can be gotten, you know, kind of a round or two after the big names in this draft go off the board. The guys that we probably won't be able to get / don't want to roll the dice on. I think that could be interesting for the Titans. Should they pay Derrick Henry? Knowing what we know about running back value, or what we think we know.
I don't think you ever pay a running back. No running back should ever get the Zeke Elliott deal.
Yeah.
Just because, and it's not because the run, I mean, like, it's not because the running back does not make the offense click, but because the way that the league is, if you do that, you then can't sign other guys who are harder to sign.
Yeah.
You know, if you sign him, maybe you can't re-sign Conklin. Conklin's more valuable than Derrick Henry in the grand scheme of value for the NFL players. Sure. Like Henry's proven himself this year. He surprised me. I thought he was going to do another like 8 games of mediocrity,
right.
2 games of is he coming around?
Yeah.
And then 6 games of burn the league to the ground. And instead he was like 2 games of is he coming around and then 14 games of burning the league to the ground. But yeah, I don't think you can give him like a 5-year $100 million deal or whatever it was that that Zeke got, because it's just not how money can be spent in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. You know what was funny about the Titans-Chiefs game yesterday? And I don't know if you tuned in early enough to see this, but I tuned in 5 or 10 minutes before they kicked off. And they were doing the big overwrought, overproduced intro package that they do for playoff games, which is really fun. And they did a thing like comparing the two fan bases. And they tried to make it look like the Titans had this like, you know, deep-seated, passionate, historic fan base. And it just made me sad, Pipe, for all the reasons we discussed.
Made you miss Steve McNair or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. I got argument's a little strong. Uh-huh. A discussion with a couple people at church yesterday, because they were like, oh, the Titans are the saddest franchise in the history of ever. And I was like, uh-uh. I said, the Titans are the most boring franchise.
Yeah.
That you can blame Jeff Fisher for that almost entirely.
Yeah.
And probably their ownership. However, you can remember going to the Super Bowl with McNair and Eddie George.
And almost Kevin, winning.
Yeah, Kevin Dyke. I mean, they were literally
The freak, 2.5 feet. Hurst, that was a cool team.
2.5 feet.
Keith from Bullock, winning. That was a fun team.
Definitely. Yes. So I believe there was some Kyle Vandenbosch seasons in there that were really nice too. So, and I'm like, no, the problem is that when you're 7-9 for 11 consecutive years, nobody cares.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas you look at any number, like Cincinnati is way more disappointing.
Yeah.
Like in terms of just terrible teams.
Dude,
the
Detroit.
Vikings are a different. Yeah. Detroit. I mean, in terms of abysmal.
Yeah.
Detroit, Cincinnati, et cetera. At least Cincy can, you know, older fans can be like, we had Boomer Esiason once. The Vikings are kind of the opposite end, where it's always competitive.
Yeah.
Always disappointing. You know, you've got the Chargers. And whatever's going on there. So, yeah, Titans fans, you had a great season, unexpectedly. This is sort of a maybe we'll make the playoff season, and instead you went to the conference title game.
Totally.
And I do think that they're set up well to build for the future. Like, it doesn't seem like this is a flash in the pan to me, assuming they solidify the quarterback position.
Dude, what's hard for the Titans, though, is that the two things that this mediocre fan base actually got excited about this year are the two pieces that logic would dictate that you don't pay a fortune to and bring back, right? Logic would say, keep Conklin, let Henry and Tannehill walk, or at least don't offer them the moon. But if you let that happen, you know, the fan base is going to revolt, you know, because they love Derrick Henry. And
Henry's at a position where franchising him makes sense.
Sure. Yeah.
Because what is it? It's equal to the top 5% or the average of the top 5% salaries at the position.
Yeah.
Well, other than Zeke, there's not a lot of high paid running backs right now.
That's true. Yeah, you can,
you know, they'll probably pay him like $11 million a year or something. And then if they franchise him again the next year, it's like that plus 40%. So they go from 11 to, you know, 15 or 14 or whatever.
Right.
And even that's not bad. And then you get 2 more years of this. And beyond that, you kind of look at it and go, is he breaking down? What's the future of our team? Did we draft somebody we're excited about?
Right.
That probably makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas Tannehill, I just don't have any faith in Tannehill. Like the difference, he is just what proves that if you have a professional level quarterback, you can play football. If you don't have a professional level quarterback, you stink.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about hiding the quarterback and perhaps the master of hiding the quarterback of all time, Kyle Shanahan. He's got Jimmy Garoppolo handing the ball off 40 times a game, throwing it 7 or 8 times a game in the case of yesterday's game, and they're going to the Super Bowl with it. And I find this completely fascinating. As a like offensive lineman and a fan of offensive line play, like I have the hugest man crush on the 49ers right now, in the sense that nobody in modern NFL history like pulls and traps like the 49ers offensive line. Nobody blocks like their wide receivers. Watching Deebo Samuel block yesterday was a joy. Like, I felt like I was watching bigger Hines Ward. You know, he was trucking people, leading the way for Raheem Mostert. Really, really fun team. I don't think Garoppolo is that bad. Like, I think Garoppolo's ceiling is higher than Tannehill's, obviously. But just the way that they're using that offense right now seems really efficient. They're not turning the ball over. They're not taking risks, and they're still ripping off huge chunks of yardage. What do you think of San Francisco, Piper? Are you excited to watch them?
Oh, I love watching Kyle Shanahan's offenses because you never quite know which way they're going to tilt. You know, are they going to do the thing where they're like, oh, well, they can't stop the run, so let's just keep doing that. The difference is that you know he will adjust. So, yeah. Like, I always go back to the Vikings because that's the team I know best. When their run game isn't working, they don't make adjustments. They just keep trying.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. They kind of go to the if at first you don't succeed, try again, which is how you lose football games. Yeah. You know, if at first you don't succeed, make a stinking adjustment.
Yeah.
Shanahan does that all the time. And yep. The adjustment he made yesterday was, oh, they can't stop us. Here we go. And I'm sure he had a whole plan of how to do play action, how to do some sort of RPO stuff to go off of the running game into the passing game, and they just didn't have to.
Yeah, he had a passing game installed for yesterday. He just didn't need it.
And I you know, you mentioned the uniform aspect of this game. I'm excited to watch these two teams because both of them are so explosive. Mm-hmm. The Niners average more yards per game than the Chiefs this year. Barely, but by a little bit. They're super explosive, super very different styles of offense in terms of, you know, the Niners don't usually get the same big chunk plays. Like, you know, the Chiefs can go 80 yards in a play anytime.
Yeah.
Both coaches are geniuses offensively. Andy Reid hopefully doesn't make any clock management errors.
Dude, I thought he was gonna yesterday. Again, I was kind of freaking out with my dad. Like, there was a moment where the Chiefs had the ball with like 4 minutes to go, and the Titans had brought it to within 10 or 13, or they were within striking distance, and the Chiefs had the ball with first down, and they ran a sweep to the short side, and the guy got pushed out of bounds, and I was freaking out. I'm just like, you had one job, you know, keep the ball in bounds, keep the clock running, make the Titans burn their timeouts. And so yeah, I had a brief moment of, oh no, Andy Reid's gonna screw this up, but he didn't.
Yeah, I think I don't know how good Jimmy G is, because I think he's on the front end of being the product of a system.
Sure.
But we've seen before that if a quarterback can run a system almost perfectly, a quarterback can be great.
Absolutely.
So I don't know that he'll ever be great, but I think he could be Matt Ryan-ish.
Yeah.
And Matt Ryan under Kyle Shanahan was really good and went to a Super Bowl. So
yep. Yep, absolutely. Boomer Esiason, who you alluded to before, the first quarterback to really run a lot of no huddle under Sam Weiss, who just passed away, but he was great in that system. You know, Jim Kelly, I think, could have been great in any system, but obviously the one that he was in Buffalo, he really thrived in. So yeah, I think the ceiling is very high for Jimmy Garoppolo, and I'm excited about it. One last question on the Super Bowl pipe, and then we'll move on to baseball cheating. Favorite defensive back in this game. I really love Richard Sherman. I know people are divided on Richard Sherman. I like him. I love Tyrann Mathieu as well. It's going to be tough for me to choose who to root for in this game because I don't have a natural caring rooting interest in either of these teams, but there are players on both sides that I really like.
Yeah, I think I want to see the Chiefs win.
Yeah.
Mainly because, for two reasons. One is I really want Andy Reid to get a Super Bowl because he doesn't get the recognition as one of the top 2 to 3 coaches of his era. You know, like, yeah. He's a better coach than Sean Payton. Mm-hmm. Except Sean Payton has his one Super Bowl and therefore is seen as you know, a level up.
Sure.
So I want Reed to get it because Reed's ridiculously good as a coach. Also, it would be fun to see Mahomes get it to sort of cement his legacy on the front end as an all-time great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows he's elite.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if he gets that, the rest of it, from here on out, it's just building a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, that's
it's right. Not proving much. Yeah, favorite defensive back. It's got to be. I love Tyrann Mathieu. Like, yeah. I love the fact that he's 5'9" and like 190 pounds and is convinced that he is, you know, Luke Kuechly.
Yeah.
May his career rest in peace.
Dude, he was tattooing people yesterday, and I'm really glad they. I'm glad they let him play. You know, I don't think any of the hits were dirty or targeting or whatever, but it seems like every time there's a big hit in the NFL and 2019, 2020, you get the 5 minute stoppage to determine, you know, whether or not it was malicious. But yeah, he's a fun player, man. He's one of those guys, like, you drop him in the 90s, he thrives. You could drop him in the 70s, he thrives. Just a football player, you know.
Yeah. Watching him makes me wonder, you know, there's so much more creativity in coaching now. Like, if Antoine Winfield played right now, would he be Tyrann Mathieu? Because Winfield was like 5'9", 180 pounds, and the best tackler on the field every time he stepped on it.
Yeah.
Except that he was basically just a man corner.
Yeah.
Stuck out there on the outside. So
yeah.
When he tackled, you were like, oh, I forgot he could do that.
Exactly.
You know? And so, you sort of look around and you're like, what could they do with guys?
Yeah.
From the past. Now, you bring somebody like, I don't know, Steve Atwater into the league today, and
yeah,
he would just get kicked out after 7 minutes for breaking all the rules. But,
well, dude, I think Atwater is a Mike linebacker today. You know what I mean? He's 6'2", 225, runs like a deer. You know, I think he's exclusively in the box, and he's probably playing linebacker. Whereas,
yeah, John Lynch is a linebacker today.
Yeah,
too, probably a really good one.
Absolutely. Whereas back in their day, you had to be 260 to be a Mike linebacker in the league because people were still running downhill between the tackles with fullbacks. You know, you had to take on ISOs back in the 90s, which is why you had an era where like LaVon Kirkland and Keith Traylor and guys like this could play inside linebacker in the league at 260, 270 and above. Yeah, the game has changed a lot. And it's interesting. Like, DBs who can tackle, like, to me, that will always be a source of fascination. Having grown up in the Deion Sanders era where he was widely celebrated but would not tackle anyone, you know.
Yeah, or like, Daryl Dawkins, you know, fastest guy on the field. But his job was basically just stay between the receiver and the quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, just run hip to hip, but didn't have to tackle anybody.
Yeah, for sure, man, for sure. So fun to see those guys who will do it. So, Piper, let's talk about baseball. I have just re-upped my MLB TV package. And couldn't be more excited for the Mariners season and some of the young guys that they have coming up. But I also just read Astro Ball. I got it for Christmas. And it's been out for a year or two, I think, but I'd never read it. And I finished reading that book, and then like 3 weeks later, all the news hit on the Astros cheating scandal. What do you make of this?
Well, first of all, Daryl Green was the guy I was trying to
think of. Yeah.
I think I said Daryl Dawkins. About. That's a basketball player.
Chocolate Thunder. Daryl Dawkins.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also great, completely different sport. It's early on.
Completely different body types, too.
Yeah. Not the fastest guy on the field
exactly.
At any point.
Exactly.
Okay. Daryl Green.
Yeah.
My apologies to a Hall of Famer. Yes. Cheating scandal. I was fascinated when it came out because, you know, the story broke when, what was the pitcher's name? Mike Fiers
yeah.
did an interview and was like, oh, yeah, they did this. And I was like, huh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the thing, it only takes a spark to get a fire going
yep.
and it spread everywhere. And then I see the pendulum swing where people are like, it's worse than what Pete Rose did. It's lifetime bans for everybody. Fire all these managers.
Right.
And I'm just like, yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is it worse than PEDs? Is it worse than...
Dude, right. Right.
It just... People been cheating at baseball since baseball was invented. You know, people built Hall of Fame careers on cheating.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that it's okay, but I think you have to take it in perspective and go, oh, that's the cheating of this era.
Yeah.
Every era has a scandal.
Yeah.
And... you know, should AJ Hinch and what's his face, the GM, have been fired along with Alex Cora, along with Carlos Beltran, since so he became the manager of the Mets, but he was fired for sins with the Astros.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I look at that and I go, that's just a PR move.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an easy one to make with the scandal in the pantheon of cheating scandals. Like the tough thing about PEDs, and this goes back to the late 90s, early 2000s with all the home runs, baseball really needed that. And the popularity of the sport was tied directly to the cheating. Whereas, I mean, I think if you make heads roll in a PR kind of maneuver on the back end of this one, it doesn't hurt the popularity of the sport. You know what I'm saying? Whereas you take PEDs out of the game in the late 90s, all of a sudden, like, your quote unquote power hitters are hitting 33 home runs instead of 63 home runs. And it's a totally different sport that the fans are watching. Whereas this one, it's fairly easy to like make some heads roll and get people out of it. So it's interesting, man, to me, like the question that I had as I was reading these articles about it and learning that almost every player on the team was involved, and it was this elaborate thing with like wearables and guys banging on trash cans. And it seemed silly and ridiculous. Like the thought I had was, how in Wes Anderson movies, you always have adults acting like children. Like that was one thought that I had. But another thought I had was, what if I'm a Christian? What if I'm me and I'm on the Astros? You know, like how does this work in light of my faith? And I don't know if they had any. I feel like Carlos Beltran or one of those guys was kind of pseudo a Christian athlete, or at least got articles in Sports Spectrum or you know, some of these Christian publications. I might be conflating. But what do you do with that? You know, you're in the clubhouse and this elaborate plan gets hatched and kind of your career rides on it in terms of being a part of things in your clubhouse. I don't know. Yeah. How would you handle that?
That's such a good question because, I mean, you think about it and, you know, you and I are both obviously Christians and played sports, and I'm sure both of us cheated.
Yeah.
You find the limits you can get away with in any game.
Yeah.
You know, in basketball, how hard can you foul a guy? How many elbows can you throw? Or can you like arm lock a guy? Can you whatever? In football, it's to the whistle plus a beat.
Yep.
It's, you know, if they're not calling holding, I'm dragging the guy to the ground every play.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just the competitive advantage is a thing that every athlete goes for. This is a little different because it's bringing an outside influences on the game, you know, so it's closer to the Patriots recording stuff they're not supposed to have access to.
Yeah.
In fact, it's real similar to that. That feels different to me, but it's easy to see how a whole locker room or clubhouse, because baseball doesn't have locker rooms, they have clubhouses.
Yeah. Which is even in and of itself a childlike term. You know.
Right. Yeah, it's like little boys club as they have a no girls allowed sign and whatever.
Yeah.
It's easy to see how if like they would all sort of be like gleefully involved in this, like, can you believe we're getting away with this? It's working again.
Right.
And yeah, it just I'm sure that once it caught up to them, they were like, why did we ever do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, granted, they're not gonna vacate any World Series titles, so maybe they're not wondering why they did that. They're going, well, it worked just fine, actually.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting, man. I guess to me, and it worked fine for the players, right? Like, this was, according to the report, a player-driven project, yet none of the players are taking the fall for it. You know, so you've got, like, grown-ups basically taking the bullet for a thing that a bunch of these kids did, kids who are millionaires. But
there's also something. So I just watched The Sandlot with my kids, I don't know, a week or two ago, because I'm itching for baseball to start, and
it's
my favorite movie, or definitely favorite sports movie, top two or three favorite movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's such a purity in the game there.
Yeah.
But when you take a kid's game and put it in the hands of adults, everything, it stops being pure.
Yeah.
100% of the time.
Yeah.
You know, like you go from a chubby catcher making fun of somebody's sister in left field to a cheating scandal and drugs are involved and electronics are involved. And there's just something sort of, you just have to take a step back and go, well, none of this has anything to do with why I enjoy sports.
Right.
Like, I enjoy the competition. It's also why I don't care about the personalities of athletes very much, because I'm not here for the drama. I'm here for the curveballs and the sliders and the fastballs and the stolen bases and, and the, you know, that 162 game grind and whatever.
Absolutely.
I really don't care about the cheating scandal is what I'm saying, I guess.
Yeah, no.
It doesn't matter to me at all. I have no self-righteousness. I just want it to go away.
Yeah, I hear that, man. I hear it completely. And I think more than any other sport, and I get that all sports are about winning and losing and it's a bottom line business. And if you don't win, you lose your job. I get that. But like baseball more than any other, it's more about it just being there, you know, than who wins and who loses. And it's why you and I can enjoy teams who aren't going to win the World Series, you know? And I mean, your team is a lot closer than mine is, but, I dare say,
but they weren't for a long time, and I was still a fan.
That's true, because you're a fan for a myriad of other reasons, and yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think the prevailing mood for me is always wanting these scandals to go away. But then, like, you flip on the TV for World Series coverage, and all the talking heads on the pregame show were like the guys who have been arguably involved in the biggest scandals of our lifetimes. You know,
yeah.
You've got the biggest cheater in the history of sports, Alex Rodriguez, next to Pete Rose, who was involved in the previous era's biggest scandal. I mean, it's laughable. You know, it's really interesting how in a worldly economy, there seem to be no consequences, which is...
And one of the best video clips I've seen of the last maybe 4 or 5 years, baseball-wise, is sort of baseball analysis, was the two guys you just mentioned. So we've got Cheater A and Cheater B, mm-hmm. you know, different eras, breaking down hitting. So you have Pete Rose and Alex Rodriguez, and I think it's sort of it was kind of a between the scenes thing.
Yeah.
So you know they're there in their dress shirts and their slacks, but not their suit coats, and they're talking about hitting and they're talking about reading pitchers, and it has boiled it down to the things that I love about baseball,
right?
Which is two supremely talented people who worked incredibly hard to get to the top of the game, talking about how they succeeded. And the finer points of it. And it was almost poetic.
Yeah.
And then you take a step back and you're like, but we're not allowed to like these guys because one of them's, you betted on the game and the other one took drugs and lied about things.
Yeah.
Like, but they're the best.
Dude, right. And I mean, what is TV if not like tacit permission to like someone? You know what I mean? Like by putting someone on television, and you and I probably have a higher view of television because we grew up when it mattered, as opposed to our kids who are growing up in a kind of post.
The thing is, I think TV now is tacit summoning to hate someone.
Oh, interesting.
Like
the hate watching.
Think about the shit, like the move in any sort of reality television or the rise of YouTube stars.
Yeah, dude, that's true.
The arc is always fame.
Followed by hatred.
Fame followed by hatred, yeah. And that tipping point might be we're bored with them. It might be controversy. It might be something comes out about their past. But, like, we always tip from fame to hatred.
And then you let a decade go by, and then you're back as a nostalgic figure.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not the YouTube stars. Hopefully they don't come back.
Right.
I mean, hopefully they come back in their personal lives and are great, but not famous. But, yeah, I think it shifted from... In the same way that, like, I think it's similar to the shift in how we view larger institutions. You know, it used to be that, oh, he's the CEO of a large company. He must be good at his job. He must be reliable. He must be whatever. Now we see institutions and we're by and large sort of side eye.
Yeah, we're skeptical. Kind of sniffing and skeptical and eye rolling about them. Yeah, for sure.
And I think it's kind of like that. And so there's sports maybe still probably has a little bit of the old school to it in the viewing. There's less, I think there's less hatred in sports than there is in other parts of entertainment. But it does seem a little bit, there's been a distinct shift in how we view, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, to me, this all goes back to if you're a Christian in that clubhouse, what's the role of your conscience? You know, where do you go? Like, I'll do all these things, but I won't do that thing. You know what I'm saying? And then once that happens, are you still accepted in the clubhouse? Do people still like sit by you on the bus? I mean, there's all these implications for it that the casual fan may or may not ever see. But So yeah, if I'm a pro baseball player who's a Christian in 1998, like, am I doing andro but not human growth hormone? You know what I'm saying? Because one is legal and the other isn't. I mean, it's just a really interesting. Well,
and there's moment. And there's such a difference between what is legal and what is right.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
And what is spirit of the law? What is letter of the law?
Right.
And none of which, I'm again not trying to give permission to things, but just trying to kind of look at it and go, this is really fuzzy.
It is fuzzy. And I think it's an argument for the believer having a really sensitive conscience and walking closely with the Lord and scripture and prayer. And I mean, all the things that we would advocate for our kids and ourselves, even if they're not elite athletes. You know, if I'm a Christian and I'm a pitcher in the 70s, like Gaylord Perry, am I rubbing KY jelly on the ball before I go out onto the mound at age 45? You know, I mean, it's interesting in baseball. There's this ethic of if I can get away with it, it's okay. And that's been a prevailing ethic for years and years and years. But I think for the Christian, the standards are different. And that's a bummer at face value, right? I mean, it's one of those things that makes you go, yeah. So it's going to be, so you're telling me, Cluck, that it's going to be harder for me to make it. And I guess I am, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I don't think it's that different from most other businesses.
Yeah.
In that there are still some places where being ethical gets you ahead.
Yeah.
But that's not even true in churches anymore.
Oh,
across
interesting.
The board. It's true in a lot of churches, but
how is it not true in churches? I mean, I agree, but I just want to hear you talk.
Attendance numbers.
Okay.
Churches has much more to do with impression than actual like profit, but attendance numbers, baptism numbers, giving numbers, how we break down the budget, like what are we including in our missions budget so we can say we give X percent to missions?
Yeah.
You can fudge all sorts of things.
Right.
To make yourself look better. And so I think the standard of, I'm going to walk fully in the light with, there's just no shadows here. There's no blurriness here.
Yeah.
It puts you behind most places.
Yeah. Man, that's true.
It makes you stand out most places, but it's pretty rare. I mean, when I worked at Lifeway, Lifeway is a super ethical company.
Yeah.
But I would talk with coworkers from time to time, and we knew there were times we could. You can fudge sales numbers. You can do whatever. So if you're trying to close a deal with one company, you can fudge sales numbers about a product to make it look more impressive.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not aware of anybody doing that, but you look at it and you're like, I absolutely have the capability to do this.
Yeah.
And nobody would ever know.
Yeah.
And it would make us significant amounts of money in closing a deal. Like, you can do that.
Yeah.
And it's not that different than, you know, do I put a little electric buzzer on my shoulder that goes twice if it's a curveball or whatever?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And I mean, it's those little compromises, I guess, that really make me scared of the hardened heart over time. You know what I mean? So if I'm making that compromise today, what am I going to be capable of in 10 years, I guess, is the scary part for the believer. So yeah, interesting stuff, man. And I guess I don't need reasons to appreciate sports, but you know, for me, it's another reason to appreciate sports, because it does kind of open up the moral conversation in your home. And, I mean, look, I've got a kid who's an athlete, and you know, he's going to be making choices about how far he goes with certain things, right? And I mean, for me in the 90s, and for him probably, nutritional supplements, kind of blurring the line into, you know, when do I start tinkering with band stuff, or do I ever start tinkering with it? That was always my biggest temptation. But, you know, it's good to have that conversation before you're in the moment, I guess, is the point. And
I think that's probably where most people go wrong. So even, you know, faithful Christian athletes, it's that there's not a commitment to a standard in advance. So when the opportunity comes up to gain a competitive advantage, and it's and it's marginal.
Yeah.
You know, it's an inch, or it's a lighthearted thing, like, sure, hey, we're going to bang the garbage can kind of thing,
yeah,
to give you a hint. I 100% would have done that when I played high school baseball. You, yeah, know, if you hear the fence rattle three times,
yeah,
say, you know, it's a slider or whatever.
Right.
And I wouldn't have thought anything of it.
Yeah.
Because that didn't feel like cheating. It felt like competitive advantage.
Yep.
And you know what I mean? But then you do that three, four, five times, and the competitive advantage inches into cheating.
Yeah.
And so you have to have the thing in advance where you're like, no, this is just, I have to play this one straight up.
Yeah.
That's how my life must be lived.
Yeah, exactly. And it sets us apart, right? And it sets us apart in ways that are uncomfortable, which is a reality of our lives as Christians, in that we're aliens and strangers here to some degree. And I just think it's a thing we don't talk about very much, you know. But it is good to talk about it. I think it's productive to talk about it. So, Pipe, as we draw our program to a close here, are we doing anything in the NBA yet? Do we care yet? My caring about the NBA, it always kicks in at kind of weird different times, and I have to admit it hasn't kicked in yet.
So I kind of follow the NBA kind of above the surface a little bit for the first part of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, so when things spike, you know, huge performances, surprise superstars, teams that are doing unexpectedly well,
yeah,
you know, they jump high enough that they hit where I'm at.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not really following how the sixth man on the Clippers is doing right now.
Yeah.
That will come.
Yeah.
But we're coming up on All-Star season. So All-Star is a great tipping point because you start to get the debates about who should and shouldn't make the All-Star team,
yeah,
which are not fun because,
yeah,
people are all arguing different things. But it's a good way to sort of aggregate who's doing well.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's doing well? And then you get the arguments about this guy should make it because his team is good. And you're like, okay, that team is doing well.
Yeah.
And so forth. So it's a good kind of, it comes after the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And it's a good sort of second half of the season, slide into it, see how everything's going. So yeah, I'm on the verge of it.
Yeah.
I'm actually excited about this Super Bowl in terms of the game itself. Mm-hmm. I think it will be, I hope it's competitive. I think it will be fun.
I agree.
And so, yeah, I'm still kind of in football mode. Super Bowl happens. Pitchers and catchers report, which I don't really care about, but it does mean like spring is coming.
It means it's coming. And, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like pitchers and catchers reporting is like going to a restaurant and putting your name in and being told you have to wait an hour.
Exactly.
You know, you're like, well, I mean, we're on the list.
Yeah, we're on the list.
Nothing happened yet.
We're technically excited about what's going to happen later, but... but yeah, we're not.
But I'm still hungry.
I'm still starving. Yeah, for sure. For sure. My NBA caring hasn't kicked in yet, except that I'm really happy for Markelle Fultz. I'm happy for the kid because he's finally playing well. He closed out the Lakers the other night, which was fun. And, you know, I'm glad he's back on track. I don't know anything about the kid. I don't know if he's a good guy or not, but, just knowing his struggles after going number one overall a few years ago. Yeah. It's fun to see him playing well.
And it sucks so bad when you see a guy just fall apart.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's so terrible. So to see him begin, I mean, he's not the player everybody hoped he would be, but he's a real NBA player right now. Yeah. And it seems like he's sort of incrementally rebuilding himself. So, I kind of hope I really hope he keeps building. But yeah, it's been fun to see him put it back together. Brandon Ingram's another fun young player where... sort of muddled along in those crappy Lakers teams.
Yeah.
Gets traded to New Orleans, and all of a sudden you're like, oh,
yeah,
he's an all-star.
The Pelicans have a terrible record, but I think they're going to be really good. I've watched a few of their games. So they've gotten booked in all these kind of like primetime slots because of Zion, who hasn't played. But so they've been on TV a lot, and I think they're going to be a nice team eventually. They've been kind of fun to watch here in the early part of the season. Pipe, any great sports reads for you? Anything you're reading or have read recently been amazing? I'm
trying to think. I've been so buried in writing recently. I'm trying to think if I've read much in the way of sports. Let me go look real quick.
Yeah.
Do you have anything while I'm wasting the listener's time?
Dude, yeah, Astro Ball, which is a really interesting read right now in light of...
Does it have a whole chapter on cheating?
Everything that's gone down, it doesn't. But it's kind of like... To me, it's a less charming Moneyball in the sense that it's basically doing the same kind of breathless analytic, isn't this awesome thing that Moneyball did, except that Moneyball was first with it and it did a better job of like sketching out characters just because I think the writer was a little bit better. But yeah, Astro Ball, it takes a deep dive into the whole, like, you know, Beltran being the kind of father figure in the clubhouse and mm-hmm. Altuve and just all that stuff. And it's all very fascinating in light of what's come down, I guess. And the central figure is the GM and kind of how he built the front office around analytics. And that's interesting, too, because those guys have, by and large, taken the bullet for the whole deal. So Astro Ball, interesting read, not as good as Moneyball, but still, I think, of interest to baseball fans.
Yeah, I've got nothing.
No, it's okay.
Just I haven't read a sports. I'm scrolling back through books I've read, and I'm feeling guiltier and guiltier. And I'm like, maybe this is why I've sort of been in a reading drag where it feels like drudgery. And yeah. Maybe it's because I haven't read sports books in a long time,
dude.
I have half a dozen sitting on my shelf waiting for me. I just haven't gotten to them.
I'm doing novels right now. Have you heard of a novel called The Interestings by Meg Wolitzer?
I have not.
It's pretty fascinating. It's the first half of it was great. The second half is, it's a thing a lot of novelists do where it just turns into like 200 additional pages of exposition, and mm-hmm. they stop doing the scenic character driven stuff that I like. But anyway, I think you would find it interesting on the level of, it's basically about people our age being jealous of their friends who have been a little bit more successful than them. So it follows this group of artists. So there was an animator, a writer, you know, a girl who wanted to direct plays, girl who wanted to be an actress, whatever. And they all went to this kind of swanky fine arts camp in upstate New York when they were kids. And the novel basically follows them through adolescence all the way up through like the age we are now, kind of like middle adulthood. And, you know, different people's careers are popping or not popping. And it's not Christian at all. So it's really kind of bleak in terms of what happens when characters die and stuff like that. But it is interesting on the level of like, what do we do with our jealousy and what do we do with our ambition as we get older? And, I don't know. I think there would be something there for you to grab onto, but, I haven't finished it yet, so I can't like wholeheartedly endorse.
Yeah. No, that sounds super fascinating. I did, in looking back, I realized that towards the end of last year, I either reread or re-listened to almost all of Pat Conroy's novels.
Oh, yeah.
Who's he's a favorite of mine. I don't know if you've read any of his stuff, but so he wrote Great Santini. He wrote Beach Music, The Water is Wide. I mean, he probably wrote eight or so novels that are all, I mean, they're all just sort of powerhouse type novels.
Yeah.
But basketball plays really heavily in all of them. So
okay.
was,
nice.
Basketball is sort of his escape from a really miserable childhood.
Uh-huh.
So there's one called My Losing Season. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's about his senior season playing at the Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a memoir.
Oh, wow.
And so like in the 60s or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a real controversial figure at the Citadel, you know, it was a very sort of insular.
Yeah. Military community. School, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In South Carolina. So very racist, very Southern, very, very insular military. And he just sort of broke all the, all the expectations. But yeah, My Losing Season is a great one. Lords of Discipline is probably my favorite book of his, which is also, it's a novel, but it's sort of autobiographical about his time at the Citadel, and basketball features heavily in that one.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Very cool, man.
Yeah. You should read Lords of Discipline. I think, I don't know if you will like it.
Yeah.
Cause I don't know what novels you connect with best, but I think you would find it riveting one way or the other.
I bet I would, man. I bet I would. I've enjoyed stuff like that in the past. Well, Piper, we have done what we always do on this program, in that we have wandered to and fro throughout some sports topics. We will record again after the Super Bowl. We have exciting sponsor news to drop for the summer and kind of for the baseball season, which I'm pretty stoked about.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
It's going to be really fun, man. And until next time, Raheem Mostert.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
In a world where relationships are easily broken and often discarded, the Rebuilding Us Marriage podcast is your lighthouse, guiding the way to hope, restoration, and transformation in Christ. I'm your host and marriage coach, Dana Shea. Join me as we discuss the necessary tools for rebuilding marriages from adversity, betrayal, and disconnection. It's time to reignite love as we rebuild marriages from the ground up. Listen to the Rebuilding Us Marriage podcast on lifeaudio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.